Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This podcast is brought to you by The Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to The Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Thursday afternoon, August 14th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Vacation home can provide family fun and memories, but it can also come with a big price tag. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, inflation posts its biggest jump in 3 years, intensifying the debate over whether the Fed should move forward with rate cuts. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com, based in Charlotte, North Carolina. Andy, thank you for joining us today. Wholesale prices jumping nearly a full percentage point, 0.9%. That was way more than expected. And what does the wholesale price report tell us about the trajectory of inflation going forward?
Well, certainly from a producer price index standpoint, it's saying that there's a lot of pricing pressures that are going on right now. Does it give us insight into CPI? It kind of does. It leads it, but it's more of a coincident indicator, just saying like, hey, these things generally move in tandem. And the key question is, and this is really the question for tariffs overall, is that will businesses pass these increased prices that they're receiving onto the consumer? And history tells us that's exactly what they'll do.
And then what does this mean for the odds of an interest rate cut in the month of September? Because we've had a mini rally on Wall Street the last 2 days coming off of the relatively cool consumer price index report. So how does this change the math for the Fed, if at all?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it, you know, it just validates their caution of why they haven't cut rates already. This is the problem. And the big question that's out there is this: is the Fed comfortable with 3% inflation? Because their target's 2%, but we're running at 3% basically. And I think we're going to continue to see pricing pressures go into the CPI and the PPI over the next 3 to 6 months, precisely because of the tariffs. So the Fed could cut rates. They did it at 3% back in 1995 or 96. I'm trying to remember exactly. And it wasn't a big deal. We didn't see a resurgence in inflation after that. So they do have some precedent for it. But I think it's very risky because there's just so much unknown about these tariffs and how they feed through.
And on top of that, the tariffs and the way they have been implemented, it's been inconsistent so far. You go back to April, you had these punishing numbers that were released in that White House ceremony at the beginning of April. And then a lot of them were pulled back. Some of them were renegotiated. Some of them were implemented, then taken off the table. And then the numbers changed. So what's a business to do in this environment?
Yeah, expect the cost increases to occur. You're right. The reciprocal tariffs went into effect on, I believe, it was August 8th, right? And so we haven't seen these really feed through much yet. Some of them, depending on the countries, yes. But we haven't seen the full brunt of them. And that's going to start showing up over the next couple of months. Businesses-wise, it's like, you know, planning for this is really difficult. It's going to be a pretty much a one-time shock to inflation overall and a one-time shock to your business. How you negotiate that, if you can slowly raise prices and start to, you know, you're going to lose some profits to do that, but maybe you can slowly raise them up month by month and see what other companies do. You know, Walmart is a great example. They're kind of the leader of the retail group. They said they're going to raise prices. And then right after them, you saw Target and others say, hey, we're going to do the same thing. So I think that's the lead where you look for leadership, obviously, from some of the bigger companies. If they start to raise prices, that gives you the go-ahead to do the same thing.
Andrew Bush, former Chief Markets Intelligence Officer at the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and economic futurist at andrewbush.com. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, deciding if a vacation home is worth the expense.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Owning a vacation home may sound like a dream, but costs and upkeep can outweigh the benefits, making investing and flexible travel the smarter way to go. We welcome in Sherry Greco-Rikus, Regional Director of EP Wealth in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And this is a very well-timed conversation because several weeks ago, I was in Maine staying at a rental vacation house. And my daughters and I, we were just taking a walk, you know, through the neighborhood. And there are these beautiful homes overlooking the Atlantic Ocean that cost millions of dollars. But there are also smaller vacation homes right next door on land that will one day be worth millions of dollars. And I was thinking to myself, that must be an incredible investment for that family that owns that particular plot, because they're going to walk away with a seven-figure payout. But the effort is required to get you to that payout is considerable.
Yeah, so let me stop you right there, Rob, because it's not always there's not always an increase in these properties. Vacation, Maine, Florida, even Wisconsin, they fluctuate up and down. So you can't always assume that the property is going to go up.
Now, when it comes to people who buy a vacation home and maintain that home through the generations, first off, you're obligated to go there. That's the first thing. So
right.
If you want to go see the world, that takes away from your time at the vacation house that you're paying a mortgage on. And then it's even more effort if you elect to rent that out, because if your guest has a problem, guess who's dealing with that clogged toilet at 2 a.m.
Yeah, not every community you can rent. There's regulations. Yeah, exactly. So you get a call at midnight because the toilet overflowed. I mean, is that what you want to do? And the other thing, I have a lot of clients that do have vacation homes, but they say it's not vacation because they have visitors all the time. So they feel that they're doing laundry and cooking meals. So it's not a vacation. I mean, there are, you know, certain reasons if it's a community or a family and you really want this home, but there's so many cons to it. You know, like I said, it doesn't always appreciate. A lot of these vacation homes are in areas where there's, you know, adverse weather, and you can't always get insurance on it. As I've also had with my clients, as the kids get older, they don't always want to go to these vacation homes. They want to be with their friends. They want to see the world. So, and I think you just mentioned, you always feel like you might need to go there. So, you know, often I do some planning where I basically take what the cost of the vacation home is, figure an assumed rate of return, and say, you know, you could rent for a month or two in this area and go on a big family vacation. You know, there's other options. But as you and I have talked always, it's what's your core values? If that's what your core value is, a vacation home, just go in with eyes wide open, because there's unexpected expenses, there's increases in real estate taxes, and it does take away some of your liquidity for doing other things.
That is a very interesting point you raise, where you talk about the rate of return on this investment. You can purchase the vacation home and do all the maintenance required of it, and maybe you like that, maybe that's fine. But at the same time, though, you could also put that same amount of money into an index fund, and chances are the money in the index fund may be greater than the money you get when you sell the house.
Yeah, and I look at a vacation property not really as an investment. It's a lifestyle choice. It's something you're doing because it's your values, it's for your family. But don't go in thinking it's going to be investment. You might get lucky. You may pick a spot where things have doubled or tripled, but really look at it more as a lifestyle choice. But again, you know, that money could be used for other things, but it all comes down to your values and what's most important to you.
Sherry Greco-Rikus, Regional Director of EP Wealth in Chicago, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up next, restaurants in the fast casual space are seeing a slowdown.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Fast casual chains like Chipotle, Cava, and Sweetgreen are finally feeling a consumer slowdown. Joining us now with an update is RJ Hadavi, Head of Analytical Research at the Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI. RJ, thank you for joining us today. And one through line through the inflation and interest rate hiking cycle has been the ability of fast casual places to attract the more price-conscious consumer. And that appears to be breaking down, or is it?
Yeah, it's a great question to ask, Rob, and it's certainly one of the trends that we've had our eye on this quarter. You're right, in last couple of quarters, the fast casual space had largely been able to shake off some of the economic uncertainty that we had. Really, we've got two things going on this quarter. One is that a lot of these chains are lapping a big menu innovation last year. So Cava and Sweetgreen both introduced steak, and Chipotle introduced chicken al pastor. So there is an element of lapping tougher comparisons that is shining through. But at the same time, too, our data seems to suggest that some of the lower income consumers may be either trading out or going to other substitutes like a convenience store or a value grocery or dollar store. So we do think a lot of the macro pressures that the management teams at these companies is legitimate and a sign of where we are in this current cycle here. So it could play out over the next couple of quarters to continue to play out. There is evidence of very price conscious consumer right now.
When we evaluate the health or foot traffic at a place like a Chipotle, for example, what is the point of comparison? Do you start in 2019? Do you start in 2021? Or do you start once inflation started to ease in 2023? Where's a good place to make the comparison?
Yeah, I think honestly, it depends on the situation here. It could be all of those, all of the above there. Right now, I think, you know, if you look at kind of the 2-year numbers, it's probably a good comparison there, too. I think that's probably, given the environment we're in, that's probably a good number. And, you know, a lot of these chains on a 2-year basis are up in terms of visitation trends. At the same time, too, I mean, I think the year over year numbers do tell us something important here. And I do think, you know, that we're starting to see year over year declines in overall transactions and visitation. It is a signal that we are seeing a lot of consumers rethink their household budgets. And, you know, to be honest, we had not seen a lot of inflation this year, but it's starting to creep in based on the most recent readings. And I think this is a consumer that is very quick to react to price increases right now. We've seen it. We saw it earlier this year with egg surcharges for a couple of the breakfast chains. We saw it for a couple other firms. Consumers are more aware of the prices they paid in the past than ever before, maybe mobile apps or being able to pull up past transactions. And so they're quick to react if they see price increases. And I think that's going to be something a lot of chains have to balance in the back half of the year.
What's interesting is that some of the chains we're talking about, Sweetgreen, Cava, and the aforementioned Chipotle, is that more and more people are going back to the office more days out of the week. Some people are back in the office 5 days a week now. And those chains are popular lunch hour spots. So this would also indicate that people, if they are going back to the office, they're brown bagging it.
Yeah, I think there is some evidence of that. Right now, our return to office index suggests that we're at about 80% of the visits compared to 2019. So we're not all the way recovered. But you do have markets like New York that are actually running above where we were pre-pandemic in terms of office visits. And to your point, that would seem to suggest that we would see a pickup in the lunchtime day part. But that actually still has been one of the weaker day parts for a lot of these fast casual chains. A lot of that has shifted to the evening for that dinner day part. So I think there's some evidence based on what we see in terms of cross-visitation data to grocery stores, as well as just kind of the lunch hour. I think you may be right. I think maybe consumers are doing something, you know, alternative and, you know, brown bagging it or, you know, finding other places for lunch, too. We have seen some of the prepared meals at grocery stores have seen a big pickup at the lunchtime day part. So maybe that's also part of the story here.
RJ Hadavi, Head of Analytical Research at the Palo Alto-based foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies Rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. Markets are mixed now. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist at the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Ryan, thank you for joining us today. And investors have had a couple of hours now to digest that hotter-than-expected producer price index report, a sign that inflation may be heating up once again. But the more time they've had to look at it, Ryan, it seems like the more their attitudes are changing, given the way the intraday the markets are going up.
Yeah, you're right, Rob. First off, thanks for having me back, and good afternoon, everybody. So, again, yesterday we got the two days ago, the consumer-level inflation came in a little bit better than expected, market rally. Now today, the wholesale producer level, which, again, came in much higher than expected initially, but now people have some time to think about it. The reality is a lot of that came from services and looks like a little squirrely, if that's a technical term I can use. It's not so much good prices are increasing. And also, don't forget, the producer level can be very, very volatile. So, you know, one data piece a trend does not make, according to Master Yoda. We'd want to see at least another month or two that truly shows a higher trend on the producer level. One more comment. Look at small caps today. Small caps are down big. I know the market's ballpark flat. S&P down ballpark flat. Small caps are at a huge rally on optimism over Fed rate cuts. So we're seeing kind of a move out of small caps today. They're still expected a Fed cut in September, I want to be clear. But it is a little bit less odds than it was this time, 24 hours ago.
Now, I was going to say, yesterday, the odds of that September rate cut was 99%. It is now down to 93%. And also yesterday, we're talking about the possibility that if the Fed were to cut, that it would be a half a percentage point, and maybe that won't be the case in September.
It might not be. Let's not forget, a year ago on September 19th, which actually talked like a pirate day. Only reason I remember this is also my son's birthday. That's when the Fed did their first 50 basis point cut a year ago, right about now. And, will they do September again, with another 50? We're not so sure. It's probably going to be 25. Again, there's one other thing that's really important to point out here. There's another jobs number and more inflation data, CPI, PPI, before the next Fed decision. So they're going to have more of a clue. And then in a couple weeks, we have Jackson Hole, the annual symposium, where Powell will give a lot of opinions on things, specifically probably inflation and when he sees cuts. So there's a lot that can change, but I think the market is really saying we want at least a 25 basis point cut. I know some other people in the Fed and different people in Washington are saying much larger numbers. So I think it'll be kind of slow and steady and probably see, two or three 25s coming up the rest of this year is still how we see it as of now.
Now, one of the pieces of analysis that I came across this morning was that you can look past this PPI number because they say the increase was driven by large gains in portfolio management, which should be of interest to the people who listen to this program, along with airfare. And when you take away portfolio managers taking very expensive flights, that the PPI was in line with expectations. Is that worthy of consideration, or is this a little bit of cope?
No, I think you're exactly right. I mentioned at the start, I did real high level. I said services came in high because it was wonky. That was the word I think I used. But the reality is that's true. Now, what we're seeing on the consumer side, we've actually seen flights and hotels and prices starting to drop again as the consumer's okay, but the economy is a little weak, and that's why we think the Fed should be cutting. But again, with portfolios, if you're a portfolio manager or a advisor, hey, the stock market's up a lot, right? And that's, everyone knows if you listen to this, hopefully, we're like flirting with all-time highs as we sit here. So, yeah, there's a little bit higher fees you'll pay your financial advisor. The reality, I guess, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, maybe let's say it's a good thing because your portfolio is worth more, so there are a little more fees there. When you strip some of those more volatile one-time things out, like you just said, it's not as worrisome. I think the bottom line, that's what the market's saying. I know we sold off a little early in the morning, but now we're coming back, and it's honestly kind of a slow, boring, late August day. So the market seems to be taking this in stride. Right. Now, if we do this 2 months in a row, we see these numbers next, in 4 weeks, maybe a little different reaction, what I think here, Rob.
Ryan Dietrich, Chief Market Strategist with the Carson Group in Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Technology Thursday, schools are getting stricter when it comes to the use of cell phones in classrooms. Talk about that next.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Technology Thursday. As more schools ban cell phones during class, and in some cases all day, many parents are torn. They see phones as a vital way to keep in touch with their kids, even as a useful classroom tool, but they also recognize they can be a major distraction. Joining us to discuss is Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today, founder, editor-in-chief of Techish.com, based in Seattle. Jennifer, thank you for joining us today. This is a case of the best intentions also kind of running into reality with these cell phone bans. I mean, parents do like the idea of being in touch with their students and in the event of an emergency, but at the same time, they don't want the distractions either.
That's exactly right. And we know that both sides lead to problems. We know that there's too many cell phones on at all the wrong times, and our kids are having some massive problems. Cell phones under the age of 13, absolutely awful, inappropriate, just don't do it. Use another gadget like a pinwheel smartwatch instead that keeps you in touch, lets them get in touch with you if there's an emergency, but doesn't have that constant like pull, you know, that their young brains just aren't wired to fight back against. We also know that there's some problems banning phones from schools. Parents are the biggest problem. They say, hey, I'm scared that there's going to be some horrible thing happen at school and I won't be able to get in touch with my kids. So there's pros and cons on each side. One thing that is glaring and it just keeps coming through is that we have to teach our children how to use phones responsibly. That is just as important as the birds and the bees and any other life lesson, but so many of us don't do that ourselves. That it's like that's what we're just figuring out.
There's a lot of counterintuitive policy when it comes to cell phone usage in schools. Yes, we know all the bad things that can happen as a result of social media and people using social media to inflict harm on others. We know that. We also know the importance of having the phone nearby so you can keep in touch with your kids and let them know about things. But at the same time, though, when you say we got to lock up our phones and do away with them, there's so much schoolwork and extracurricular work that takes place through your phone these days. It's the first day of school is either here for many people. It's next week for our family, and you got to get, you know, there are the academic apps, there are the sports apps, there are the learning apps, there are the reading tracking apps. You got to download all of this stuff, and then you say, oh, and by the way, don't ever look at this thing for 10 hours a day.
Isn't that the most hypocritical thing that we face right now when it comes to all of this? It's all being done on group texts, group meetings, group meetups, everything. And if you don't have access to that, you get left out. My daughter's starting law school. Same thing. She could not get into the big group me text and was missing really important information. So, yeah, we have to strike a balance. We've learned, you know, there's so many scientific studies, hundreds of thousands of people involved in these now. It's not anecdotal anymore. And we know that if your smartphone is out on your desk while you're working as an adult or while kids are trying to do homework, it's a cognitive distraction and their performance and cognitive ability goes down as a result. We know that. We feel it. We know it. So it is best to stick your phone in a drawer, turn all the notifications off, set a timer, have an hour, 30 minutes, however long you can go without having that phone right there. We also know, to your point, that bans don't really work. So we have to keep kind of mucking through it, struggling through it, and figure out. It's very similar to, you know, just say no arguments. It didn't really work all that well. We had to do better than just one rule, you know, kind of lumping everyone into the same situation. But I've just gotten through reviewing another round of these kind of smarter phones and smarter wearables for kids. Highly recommend for kids under the age of 14 that you start them out with a training wheel gadget.
Now, for the parents, though, talking about putting the phones away, no one is without sin in this particular situation.
So
and when you talk about just say no policies, remember that old PSA where the parent finds the kid was smoking pot and then he says, "Where'd you learn this from?" "I learned this from watching you." Well, in terms of the phone discourse, this would be similar to the parent smoking a joint in front of the kid and then saying, "Where'd you learn how to do this?" Because the parents are just as addicted as the children are.
And that is the most important point to all of this. If you are scrolling, you are on your social media, you hold up your finger 1 second, "I've got to do this, I've got to do that, I've got to be, my nose is in my own phone," then you're teaching your kid exactly opposite of what's going to turn them into a healthy human being on planet Earth in 2025. It's hard. It sucks. You know, we are all completely addicted to our own smartphones. If you don't change that, you are setting your kids up for failure.
Jennifer Jolly, Tech Life columnist for USA Today. Thank you for joining us today.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Mortgage rates have dropped, sparking a rush to refinance, but how long will it last? Let's get the perspective of Brian Wickert, president and owner of Accudent Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Brian, thank you for joining us today. And since you are in the metropolitan Milwaukee area, Brian, let's ask the most important question today, and that is, have you received your voucher for a free George Webb hamburger?
Oh, no, I haven't signed up yet for that. But yeah, we're going to do that. That's really something, isn't it? Even the Cubs guys are complimenting us.
I was going to say the Milwaukee Brewers have won 12 in a row, which is, of course, a major source of frustration for Cubs fans around here. Anything they do, you just can't stop the Milwaukee Brewers. And you can't stop people from refinancing, because if there's any break in the 30-year fixed rate mortgage activity ticks up, and this is with maybe an 11 basis point reduction.
Yeah, we've been helping a lot of our customers who bought homes, let's say, over the last year and ended up with a rate of 6.99 or 7.125 or even 7.25%. And on a $300,000 loan, Rob, it only takes about a 0.5% drop in that rate to save $100 a month. That's a good deal.
So, you're right. That ain't nothing. So even with the idea of saving $100 a month, you're going to go through all the time and the effort and filling out all those documents for a potential savings of $1,200 a year.
Well, you know, it's all about how easy your lender can make the process. And of course, we like to think we make it really easy at our shop. But the other thing that I want listeners to really pay attention to is, what is it costing them to refi? Okay. And that doesn't always equal how much cash you're bringing to the closing table. A lender can charge you a lot in fees, but still have you come to closing with no money by simply increasing your loan balance. So you got to watch out for that. What is the true cost to getting that refi? In the Chicago area, by the way, the hard cost for an appraisal, title update, credit report, and closing is about $1,800. And a lot of times, lenders like us, we can give you a closing cost credit to help offset that. That really accelerates the return on investment. So you got to look at the real cost of refinancing.
What is the trend when it comes to mortgage rates? Is this a blip, or is this a sign that maybe the mortgage rate market could be turning a corner?
It all depends on what happens with the September jobs report that comes out the first Friday of September. And so that's why we are where we are right now. We had the dip in rates, Rob, because we had a much weaker revision in the number of jobs created that came out the first Friday of August. That gave us the rate decrease, the significant rate decrease that we're enjoying now. It's like the Fed already cut rates. We're enjoying that right now. So it's really hard to tell where we're going from here. It's going to depend on two things, inflation reports and the jobs numbers.
Brian Wickert, president and owner, Accudent Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us today.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.